Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We bring you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves while putting people before political parties. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective with the goal of leaving you better informed. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, and subscribe on Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. In exchange for supporting our program, we give you all kinds of bonus content and free stuff. Just moments ago, we ended a bonus episode on the history of anarchism in our series called Defined. So you can get that right now, $5 a month or up. You get to participate in the live streams and in the chat room if you're a $10 a month or up. We have an exclusive Facebook group for those folks, so check it out at WeAreLibertarians.com. This show is crowdsourced, so you can send us news with the hashtag WALNews or on our Facebook group or Discord channel. We're always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@WeAreLibertarians.com. I read everyone. I don't get a chance to respond more than monthly, but I do read all of your emails, and then we put those in listener question show. Please be warned that this show is raw, unedited, and authentic, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive. With me, the reason it'll be offensive tonight is the great, the legendary Tad Western.
Welcome, Tad.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on tonight.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Everybody else must have been busy.
No, if we're talking Trump, I want to have the old Tadster here.
Oh, am I the Trump expert? What would my title be if we were... Oh, we are on TV. What's my projected title right now?
Well,
Tad Western, Trump...
Trump Wrangler.
Oh, Trump Wrangler. There we go.
Yeah,
I like that.
That other voice laughing you hear is Matt Whitliff. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's amazing to meet Tad Western in person.
You've never met the old Tadster.
I don't think we've ever met before. Right, 10 minutes ago. Yeah,
you got a nice Tad has a nice shirt on. It's got palm trees. It's a linen shirt. Looks like he just came off the bar over at Cheeseburger in Paradise.
You know what? I wish I would have stopped by and got some Jimmy Buffett beer, but some what is that? Land Shark. But yeah, I've been
or
drinking
a margarita.
A whole lot.
Maybe.
Yeah, margarita actually sounds good.
Well, Tad, you watch every one of his speeches. His
Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah, Trump's rallies.
Matt's on it. Yeah. Look at Matt.
Trump's rallies are basically just 45-minute stand-up comedy routines. He's doing crowd work.
Look at the media back there. Oh, he's got his go-to. Look at the... I mean, that's where he comes up with the fake news, lying. I mean, it's great. It is like a stand-up show.
Look at this... see, they want me to read this on the teleprompter, but... Let's get it out of here.
Yeah, the best is when he has the protesters and he's like, go home to mom. Your mom's voting for Trump. You know? Just go back and watch some of the rally highlights. Just do yourself a favor.
Even if you hate Trump, watch the rallies on YouTube. I like it.
Yeah, it's
subscriber. He's an entertainer.
Exactly.
Yeah, he knows what. Yeah, he's.
We have quite the show for you planned tonight. We are going to talk all about the Russia stuff that is happening. I've got clips prepared. I've got articles prepared. I've got opinions. I know they have opinions, so we're ready to go. Let's just jump into it. We have a lot to talk about because I've gotten very few times. And I don't know this. I don't know if this happens to you guys, but I think by the nature of what I do and the podcast that I have, I get messages from people all the time going, "Hey, what should my opinion be on this? It's not even that. It's like, what in tarnation is happening? I just break this down for me in a very quick way. And so the highlights of what's gone on is that on Friday, the Mueller investigation released an indictment on 12 Russian intelligence officials right as Trump was about to meet Putin. And so... the timing is suspect, which we'll get into.
Yeah, well, they cleared it with Trump earlier in the week.
Did they?
Right. Yeah, yeah. They met on like Monday or so, or at least Rosenstein, I believe.
It gave him a heads up.
Yeah,
but
yeah. He knew it was coming.
Uh-huh. And I'm sure it was totally innocent. And so...
nothing political.
Not at all. And so, excuse me. Then Trump goes and meets Putin. Like, they've met in person a couple times and in passing... but they've not had like a sit-down conversation, so they met for a couple hours. You know, like Trump's meeting with these Supreme Court nominees for like 20 minutes, but Putin, he gives them a couple hours, a two, three-hour conversation. It's just Trump and Putin, Same with Kim Jong-un. It's just the two of them with their translators in a room. Can't imagine how quickly debriefed those translators are on both sides. And
how do you translate huge in Russian?
And so then they come out for a press conference, and it goes pretty well. And this is – so Putin says some things. If you want to hear the whole press conference, we have a podcast feed called Raw Audio Politics. And I put in this entire press conference, today's press conference, yesterday's press conference, the Putin interview with Chris Wallace, and the Trump interview with Tucker Carlson. So you can hear all the first sources. You can go and read all of the articles that I read in prepping for this show at WeAreLibertarians.com, or sign up for our email newsletter where I send you the links, the show prep, via email after every episode. So you can see all the different opinions and pieces and articles and everything. I show my work, basically. But
there's just one link at the bottom that says Wikipedia.
Just one link. Don't make fun of the last
Chris
show that
Spangle.
We just did. It's one link. It's my photo, and it says
ChrisSpangle.com.
Trust me. I know what I'm talking about.
I am dear leader.
I am dear leader. So the two of them, Putin makes Trump wait for an hour.
Yeah, that was pretty boss.
he apparently does this all the time.
He did what Trump did to the Queen.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they have this press conference. Putin says some stuff. Trump says some stuff. And then Trump says some more stuff. And then he says, I didn't say that. And then he says, no, I did say that. And then it's all a mess. And that's kind of where we're at. But I want to kind of go in linear fashion. We're going to get into the details of all of this. So let's start with the actual indictment that got dropped the other day. Now, I chose to so I've taken the different pieces of this, and what I always try to do when I'm putting together one of these research shows on a current event like this that everybody's talking about, and I want to bring you all of the information of what's going on. And so what I try to do is I try to go to a bunch of different news sites and find the different opinions on what happened, all the different news, because you would be surprised that if you go to the Washington Post every day, and then you go to Vox and National Review and Reason, they all say something completely different than what the Washington Post says. And then they say something different from each other. So there's always a bunch of different opinions. And that's why I think what we try to do is give you what's going on in the news from an objective point of view and give you our opinion on it, as well as arming you with a bunch of links that you can go and research for yourself. And so what the best breakdown of the charges and what actually happened was on The Intercept, which isn't a surprise. Intercept is left libertarian-ish. That's basically run by Glenn Greenwald, who was involved in all the Snowden stuff. Very trustworthy source when it comes to fighting the security state.
I think he's a Russian agent, though.
That's what a
Isn't
lot of people
Snowden
say.
Still there,
but
it's fake news.
He apparently just met Snowden.
Throw it out.
And so the guy named Michael Lee on TheIntercept.com on the 18th wrote, what we learned about Russian and U.S. spycraft from the Mueller's indictment of hackers. So they basically break down what this indictment was a full breakdown of the hacking of the DNC emails, who did it, how it happened, and all that. So there's a ton of conspiracy theories going around. And so why I think this was so informative to me is that you see articles from like the New York Post basically saying, you know, there's this group of ex-intelligence agents who are all saying that they're the ones who hacked in, or that they have it on, you know, there was a guy with the last name of Murray who was going around basically saying Bill Murray, or maybe one of his brothers, maybe one of his brothers, Dennis Murray. So who was basically saying, you know, he talked to Snowden or he talked to Assange and it wasn't the Russians and blah, blah, blah. But The Intercept basically has accepted the premise that it was the Russians. And the indictment, if you read it, is a narrative account of how they broke into it and hacked it. And it's very detailed. And what I like about this article is that they give you the details and then also fill it in with other details. And you walk away going, okay, the Russians did it. Because I was pretty skeptical. I mean, even sitting down, like, because I don't know. I'm not a security expert.
I'm not either, but I can tell you if it's coming out of Bob Mueller's mouth, it's a lie.
That's right, Tad.
And I've got the alternate facts over here.
So The Intercept writes, the indictment says that the organization DC Leaks, which we had talked about previously.
Yeah,
DC,
they had been registered, yeah.
Yeah, DC Leaks basically was, along with WikiLeaks, where you were getting a lot of the emails, and that was the origin of Pizzagate. Now, you went to Washington, D.C. Now, I heard you went to Comet Ping Pong.
I have never been in the basement of Comet Ping Pong.
Well, I'm not saying you were a participant. I heard you were investigating.
No, I've never stepped foot in D.C.
Okay.
Inside the Beltway, as the locals say.
See, Matt, this
he
is what...
He would do that or wouldn't do that?
No, see, Tad is a great...
Actually, it was my hard drive that got shot when that guy went to shoot the pizza place up. And just a random hard drive got a bullet through it.
Now, Tad is obviously a foreign power agent, and he would never tell.
Right. Sovereign state of Tad.
So DC Leaks at the time claimed that they were started by a group of American hacktivists and the persona Guccifer 2.0, who claimed to be Romanian, a lone hacker. They're both controlled by named Russian intelligence officers. And they basically, in this indictment... Name the intelligence officers.
Yeah, they're all named.
And I'll explain how they got there in a moment. So the Russian officers took steps to anonymize their hacking and infrastructure, according to the indictment, trying to leave no trace of their identity as they rented servers, registered internet domains, and set up accounts for email, Twitter, and other users. But they didn't do the best job compartmentalizing this infrastructure. This allowed Mueller's team to confirm that the people were behind a number of ostensibly distinct operations. DC Leaks, Guccifer 2.0, the Spear phishing campaign, and the hacks of the DCC and DNC networks. For example, the Spear phishing emails that John Podesta, Clinton's campaign chair, and others received included links to the URL shortening service Bitly. This Bitly account was created and it was registered using the email address durbinasabel@mail.com. The attackers that used the same email address used it to create pretty much everything, including an online registering for an online crypto service, which they think is BitPay.
That's how they paid for the website.
Yeah, the same cryptocurrency account was used to pay for registering the domains to DC Leaks. So what isn't mentioned in the indictment is that on one occasion, someone reportedly logged into the Guccifer 2 Twitter account without connecting to a VPN first. Mm-hmm. Revealing their real IP address, working off the IP address, the Daily Beast states U.S. investigators identified Guccifer 2.0 as a particular GRU, see, X used to be the KGB, officer working out of the agency's headquarters in Grizadobovy Street in Moscow. So a VPN is basically a virtual private network that kind of, it's hard to trace, it's like an anonymized IP address.
It's like spoofing your phone number for IP addresses.
Right. So, to take over the first DCC network and then the DNC network, the GRU hackers, according to the indictment, used a spear phishing email which tricked the recipient into entering their password on a malicious site. They then used the victim's credentials to access the DCC's internal network and installed custom malware called X-Agent on at least 10 DCCC computers, according to the indictment. Soon thereafter, as the indictment states, the hackers pivoted to DNC networks, the DNC's network. From one of the DCCC computers, the Russian hackers allegedly activated X-Agent's keylog and screenshot functions to steal credentials of a DCCC employee who was authorized to access on the DNC network. Armed with those credentials, they were able to access approximately 33 DNC computers. Once on the DNC network, they compromised the DNC's Microsoft Exchange server, gaining access to thousands of emails. After someone hacks a computer and installs spyware, the attacker then sends commands to the spyware to send back to them. This is typically done by connecting a computer known as a command and control or a C2 server. According to the indictment, the computer that the Russians leased to act as X-Agent C2's server, it was located in Arizona. And it was to issue commands to specific hack computers to log keystrokes and take screenshots. In the midst of the hack, the DNC discovered what was going on, hired CrowdStrike, which is hired by the Republicans too. People are saying, "Oh, it's a DNC conspiracy." No, they work with everybody. They're of the Green Party. If your money's green, they'll work with you.
But the founder is former FBI.
Okay,
and the DNC did not hire. Well, the timeline's a little iffy, but the lawyer for Sussman was the DNC's lawyer, Hillary's Clinton lawyer.
Right.
He hired CrowdStrike before. They never went to the FBI. They didn't go to the police. They didn't go anywhere.
Right.
He immediately, the hackers had been in for months, 6 months, I believe, is what it was. And there's multiple hackers. It wasn't just one. But there's actually a book you can read. It's called How the Democrats Lost and the Republicans Won.
Right.
But all this is documented in it, too. All this isn't new.
Yeah, that's the thing about all of this.
Yeah, no, this isn't new at all.
It's all completely been known. Yeah.
But the timeline is, I mean, it's good to know and get out there.
Well, I think the thing that that validates a lot of this information that we've all kind of known is that it is backed by the power of subpoena.
Yeah, but you're subpoenaing. There's no Americans. They're never going to show up, so there's not going to be. Innocent until proven guilty, and there's never going to be. They're not going to show up, so there's no discovery. So
yeah. So what I'm saying is they're subpoenaing BitPay, the server companies, Facebook, Twitter. And so they're working directly with these companies. And
there's a lot of detail in the indictment, right? Like exact amount of Bitcoin that was transferred to this particular. It doesn't give you the account number, but a particular account. And it was, this happened between 4:15 and 4:52 or whatever.
Literally, this is the next paragraph. The fact that the U.S. government had access to the keystrokes and screenshots collected by the C2 server and even knew at what point in time the GRU agents deleted the activity logs and login history from the server leads me to believe that the hosting provider likely started to cooperate with the investigation, including possibly sharing snapshots of the hard drive connected to the C2 server.
Sure. They were out of, Belgium, I believe?
This is the, I think they're talking about the Arizona server company.
Oh, the Arizona, I know they had another server in, Belgium, I believe.
Yeah, and they had one in Chicago, I think, as well. Yeah. It also appears the hackers were unaware that the DNC was onto them until after CrowdStrike published their findings. They appeared to have deleted logs from their C2 servers after U.S. investigators already had access to it. In addition to leasing a server in Arizona, the Russians also allegedly leased a separate server in Illinois where they installed malware. So clearly they were on to them before the hackers knew. And then one thing that stood out to this guy is that he's reading the indictment and how many times the document mentioned exactly what one of the defendants, GRU Cyber Operations Ivan Yermakov, was researching on the internet and when. And then they go on to list some of this stuff. How could the U.S. investigators have access to this information? Two explanations come to mind. The most likely is the NSA compromised your mom's computer and regularly logged his keystrokes or accessed his browser history. Another example would be that Yermakov used Google while logged into an account to do these searches, and the investigators learned his search history from Google. I find the latter to be less convincing because the search engine Yandex is much more popular in Russia, and GRU officers are not stupid enough to really use Google in California. So basically they believe that they had been keystroking the Russian hackers, essentially.
Yeah, they had hacked, Colin Powell. They tried breaking into the RNC as well.
Right.
And there were Homeland Security, I believe, even tipped off the DNC about how shitty their network was, and they were just like, whatever.
The indictment basically publishes some of the WikiLeaks stuff, the WikiLeaks messages, asking Guccifer to send WikiLeaks any new materials. On July 6th, WikiLeaks asked again, if you have anything Hillary-related, we want it in the next 2 days, preferable because the DNC convention is approaching, and she will solidify Bernie supporters behind her after, adding that we think Trump has only a 25% chance of winning against Hillary, So conflict between Bernie and Hillary is interesting. On July 14th, just a few days later, Guccifer sent an email to WikiLeaks in a text document. The body of the email was plain text, unencrypted and vulnerable to interception by third parties, but the attachment was encrypted. The indictment says the unencrypted body explained that the encrypted files contained instructions on how to access the online archive of stolen DNC documents. On July 22nd, just a few days later, WikiLeaks published a database containing the hacked emails. They don't put all of this out. 2.5 weeks later, after publishing the DNC emails while being interviewed on a Dutch television show, WikiLeaks editor Julian Assange encouraged a conspiracy theory that DNC staffer Seth Rich, who had been recently killed in what the DC police said was a botched robbery, was his source for the DNC emails. After stating WikiLeaks sources face danger, he alluded to Rich. And so it's pretty clear at this point that Seth Rich, he was... The Seth Rich thing is probably a conspiracy.
Well, there was multiple leaks, too. I mean, there wasn't just there wasn't just one thing. So, I mean, he could have... Who knows?
So that's kind of
there was a theory, too, about the transfer rates being way too high to be broadcast, that they were done through thumb drive.
So I think at this point, it is... So someone...
I'm not... Obviously, it's not in there, but...
Right.
And that's the... indictments.
So. Mm-hmm. So the thing that stands out to me is like I don't know that it's the Russians, but to me, when 17 intelligence agencies, you have very specific information, even The Intercept is saying that it's the Russians. Yeah. It's probably the Russians.
It's probably the Russians at this point. Right. Like we, as skeptical, thinkers against the government and, you know, knowing that there's been all sorts of things perpetrated through the years and all that type of stuff, I mean, there's a healthy reason for skepticism, right? But at the same time, there's enough signs, I think, at this point, pointing to it that, you know, whether we take it at face value or not, I think is almost immaterial in the grand scheme of things, right? Because even if the Russians didn't do it, then like whatever, right? I mean, that's what's going on right now, right?
So
I mean,
you still have over 20 states that had some of their election systems. Like, let's all stop being naive and just assume that the Russians did try to influence our election,
sure,
and that it came from the Kremlin. And the question, and we've always, and even here on We Are Libertarians, we've been skeptical of the Russia collusion investigation.
There's so many Russian narratives that need to be separated. Like, obviously, the Russians are always trying to get in, or what, or Russians, however you want to define it, whether they're paid opposition or whatever. I mean, who the hell,
part of the GRU or some other independent or rogue agents or lone whatever, right? I mean,
there's so many different.
Well, you remember the Chinese buying missile blueprints off
from
of
Bill Clinton?
Clinton.
Yeah, in the White House. Yeah.
You know, and here's what I've always maintained is that that foreign powers, especially the bigger the foreign power, the more adversarial the foreign power, the more motivated they are to try and get information from government officials, from potential campaigns. I've always maintained that these foreign powers do exactly what Russia tried to do to Trump. They'd probably tried to do it to Clinton. You know, half a dozen times they hit the Trump administration trying to gain access.
Yep.
I'm sure that half a dozen times they tried Clinton, too. Mm-hmm. There have always been attempts by foreign powers to get information. This is how spycraft works.
Yeah.
And so I think what we have seen with what Donald Trump has brought to America is the investigative journalism of the New York Times trying to find out what's going on with Trump, and we're seeing what goes on in American politics. And so the Trump administration, even if there was interest in finding out what was in these emails, which there clearly was, even if they did have meetings trying to find out what was in the emails, it didn't seem like it really went anywhere.
Right.
And we, at this point, are starting to see it's sort of like, what's the point of the Mueller investigation? Like, we can...
Well, there was no defined scope when it started,
right.
So no...
We can pretty much tell at this point that there wasn't collusion, that Donald Trump wasn't even capable of colluding. He can't collude with himself. I mean, which we'll get to as the last few days. And so they didn't act on this information. Like I think at this point we've tapped out. We've hit the bottom of this well. So what's the point
and
of
even,
the investigation?
Even
going
calling
forward?
It influence in an election. I mean, no votes were changed. It was literally hacking DNC, the private company, which
right.
obviously it'll have an effect when you release the documents on what the public thinks, but. By God, we were down to Trump and Hillary at that time anyway, and it wasn't like, I mean, who was undecided?
So there's a very, like, we always knew that somebody hacked into the DNC, that yep. someone was trying to influence the election. We've known pretty much from the start that it was probably the Russians who did that, because they did not like Hillary Clinton.
Well, CrowdStrike came out the day after they investigated, and that's when they said it was the Russians. So they had obviously seen, from what I was reading, the forensics on it was everything that you'd read in that.
Right.
They had seen before trying to attack various other government agencies and whatever the hell they secure.
Right.
Because, I mean, they're a notorious group. They call them like Cozy Bear or something.
There's Fozzie two, Bear, yeah.
Yeah. Cozy and Fozzie. But,
no, that's
no, there was two. That's literally what they called them. And
right.
They were notorious. Apparently, I don't know how the hell they know, but.
Well, it was like an office of bros hanging out in Moscow on this road, yeah. and they got caught because one of them didn't VPN their
yeah,
login
you know
to Guccifer.
You know, he was slamming some $3 vodka.
And so what the American government did is they basically tracked this office. They probably had American assets who were
sure.
trying to get in. How do you think that they knew who worked in that office?
Yeah, absolutely.
That was another thing, too, is
The 12 people that work in this office, how do we get those names?
Well, they
Let's
were FBI. They were FBI. They had known. They
right.
were. I mean, it's not hard to figure out intelligence agencies.
Right. So
nobody keeps a secret.
So the question for the Mueller investigation was, did Trump collude? I, at this point, can say with 95% certainty that I don't think that there was any collusion.
I don't think so either. There's one small reference I saw in the indictment to the Trump campaign, but it was either Guccifer or WikiLeaks or whatever reaching out to try to like
Papadopoulos.
Yeah,
fish. Like,
well,
hey,
that was right. the Roger you know. Stone thing too.
Yeah.
Roger Stone sent him a Twitter.
Yeah, Roger's going to go to jail at some point sooner than later. Like, it's pretty clear, the writing's on the wall, that Mueller's really after Roger at this point. And it's funny, like, Manafort, Conrad Black, and Roger Stone basically invented lobbying in the 80s.
Yeah.
And they've done so much illegal shit that they've
and
gotten away with.
They're in their 80s, and they're going to be behind bars because of what they started.
Yeah. So the Mueller investigation and the Trump, like, if Trump did nothing wrong, let's move on. The real problem is that you have a foreign power like Putin trying to disrupt our elections, and that's the very serious issue that Americans need to come together
well,
and work
on. I think we, to a degree, can tie that out a little bit differently too, right? Because you can argue the merits or the constitutional power, whether he should or shouldn't have it as an investigator, mm-hmm. as Mueller, right? But his sole mandate and remit is not to go try to find Trump collusion.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's not what he's there for.
No, he's supposed to be investigating a crime that committed. Or,
well, I mean, there and here's a yeah. crime, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he has indicted quite a few people on crimes at this point. And so I think on that criteria, there's progress. Now, is it worth the sideshow? That's a different question.
Funny you should mention that, because Andrew McCarthy, former federal prosecutor, writer at National Review, and podcaster now of the McCarthy Report, wrote a piece on July 16th titled "Mueller's Politicized Indictment of 12 Russian Intelligence Officers." I'm not going to read you the whole piece, but I'm going to give you some of the highlights here. Make no mistake, this is nakedly politicized law enforcement. There is absolutely no chance any of the Russian officials charged will ever see the inside of an American courtroom. The indictment is strictly political document by which the special counsel seeks to justify the existence of his superfluous investigation. Rosenstein made another telling remark at this big press conference. The Justice Department, he explained, will now transition responsibility for this case
mm-hmm.
to our department's National Security Division while we await the apprehension of the defendants.
They're going to be waiting a while.
Now stop giggling over that last part, the bit where we hold our breath until Russian dictator Vladimir Putin extradites his spies into the FBI's waiting arms. I'm talking about the first part. Mueller's case, the definitive case about what Russia did to interfere in the 2016 election, is no longer Mueller's case. It is being transitioned, i.e. buried, in the Justice Department unit that deals with counterintelligence matters that do not result in public trials. This underscores what we have been arguing here since before Mueller was appointed. There was no need and no basis in federal regulations for a special counsel. A special counsel is supposed to be appointed only when there are a concrete factual basis to believe federally prosecutable crimes have been committed, calling for a criminal investigation, and B, a conflict of interest that prevents the Justice Department from conducting the criminal investigation. As we've observed countless times, there was no basis for a criminal investigation of President Trump or the Trump campaign. The fact that Russia interfered in an American election, as it routinely does, never meant that the perceived beneficiary of the interference was criminally complicit in it. There is no known evidence that Trump campaign officials have had any involvement in hacking by the Russia intelligence services. Mueller's new indictment powerfully suggests that this could not have happened. The Russians were expert in their cyber espionage tactics. They did not need anyone's help, and they took pains to conceal their identity from everyone with whom they dealt. Moreover, even though the Trump campaign officials have been charged with other crimes having nothing to do with the 2016 election, and some of those Trump officials had contacts with Russians, Mueller has never charged one of them with a crime related to Russia's espionage attack on the election. Nor has he ever elicited from any defendant who pled guilty an admission of any such crime. The only known allegations of such crime are contained in the unverified Clinton campaign-sponsored Steele dossier, and the Trump campaign figures implicated in it have either not been charged, see Carter Page, Michael Cohen, or have not been charged with a collusion crime, see Paul Manafort. Thus, among the worst aspects of the Mueller's new indictment, is the continuation of the Justice Department's politicized perversion of its criminal counterintelligence mission. Lacking the requisite basis to conduct a criminal investigation, the Justice Department used its counterintelligence mission as a pretext for appointing a special counsel. This was grossly improper. 1. Counterintelligence work, which is geared at thwarting the operations of hostile foreign power, is not the work of a prosecutor who builds criminal cases. 2. Not surprisingly, then, there is no authority in the regulations to assign a special counsel to a counterintelligence investigation. And 3. Because counterintelligence authorities do not afford Americans the due process protections required in criminal prosecutions. The Justice Department is not permitted to use the counterintelligence as a pretext for conducting what is actually an effort to build a criminal prosecution. So, and he basically goes on to say that he's woven an indictment that can never be tried out because it involves foreign powers, and you're not going to be able to put any of that on trial before the public because it all deals with foreign powers. And so now the purported need for Mueller is being rationalized on two fictitious premises. The first is that the new indictment shows we need Mueller to get to the bottom of Russia's perdifi. I don't know what that word means. This is false. There is nothing new in the Mueller's indictment. His participation was unnecessary to discover what our counterintelligence investigators have learned, and the intelligence that they have gathered should not have been put in an indictment. Aggression by a hostile foreign power is not a law enforcement issue, and it is a mockery of the justice system to charge foreign aggressors and pretend we presume them innocent of their attacks against our country. The second is the number of indictments Mueller has generated proves that there were solid grounds to suspect Trump campaign collusion in Russia's election meddling. That's blatant partisan dishonesty of this claim best encapsulated in this Washington Post report. Mueller and a team of prosecutors have been working since May 2017 to determine whether any Trump associates conspired with Russia to interfere with the election. With the new indictment, his office has filed charges against 32 people on crimes, including hacking, money laundering, and lying to the FBI. The Post goes on to grudgingly point out that 26 of the 32 are Russians, who are unlikely to ever be put on trial in the U.S. Unlikely? But the paper conveniently omits the mention of the fact that none of the 32 have been charged with a Trump-Russia conspiracy to interfere in the election, and that is the only thing that Mueller was needed for. So I think that's a really good summation kind of why the Mueller investigation has completely surpassed its need and usefulness and was never really needed to begin with. And it was just a way to really damage them. The same point is kind of made that now that's the National Review. That's the right. The left is making a similar point at truthdig.com by a writer named Scott Ritter, who's an intelligence officer. And he goes on to talk about how people are trying to impeach Rod Rosenstein to end the Mueller investigation. And he writes, well, the impeachment of Rosenstein is highly unlikely. The FBI being found of guilty of its investigations being corrupted by individual bias is equally slim in the world of politics. Perception creates its own reality, and the Mueller investigation has been taking a public beating for some time. By releasing an indictment predicated upon the operating assertion that 12 named Russian military intelligence officers orchestrated a series of cyber attacks that resulted in information being stolen from computer servers belonging to the Democratic Party, and then facilitated the release of this information in a manner designed to do damage to Clinton, Rosenstein sought to silence once and for all the voices that have been attacking him along with the Department of Justice. There's one major problem with the indictment, however. It doesn't prove that which it asserts. True, it provides a compelling narrative that reads like a spy novel. And there is no doubt in my mind that many of the technical details related to the timing and functioning of the malware described within are accurate. But the leap of logic that takes the reader from the inner workings of the servers of the Democratic Party to the offices of the Russian intelligence officers in Moscow is not backed up by anything that demonstrates how these connections were made. That's the point of an indictment, however. It doesn't exist to provide evidence beyond a reasonable doubt. It rather serves to provide enough information to demonstrate probable cause. No one would or could be convicted at trial on the information contained in that indictment alone. For that to happen, the government would have to produce specific evidence linking the hacks to named Russians and provide details on how this evidence was collected and by whom. In short, the government would have to be willing to reveal some of the most sensitive sources and methods of intelligence collection by the U.S. intelligence community and expose and therefore ruin the careers of those who collected the information. This is something the government has never been willing to do, and there is much doubt that if, for some odd reasons, the Russians agreed to send one or more of the named officers to the U.S. for indictment, that this indictment would even go to trial. It simply couldn't survive the discovery to which any competent defense would subject the government's assertions. Mueller knew this when he drafted the indictment, and Rosenstein knew this when he presented it to the public. The assertions set forth in the indictment, while cloaked in the trappings of American justice, have nothing to do with actual justice or the rule of law. They cannot and will never be proved in a court of law. However, by releasing them in this manner suggests that the government is willing to proceed to trial, a perception that is created and implies that they can withstand the scrutiny necessary to prevail, and as we know, perception is its own reality. I thought that was a pretty, and he goes on to talk about in 2017, The Intercept, talked about its own spear phishing campaign. It's titled Spear Phishing Campaign TTPs Used Against U.S. and Foreign Government Political Entities. It's a highly technical document where basically they outline the American government's ability to do exactly what the Russians did to the DCCC and the DNC. And so he basically just demolishes the idea that this had anything to do, that this was anything other than a political move by Mueller to justify his existence, because people just won't know any better.
Well, nobody reads documents.
Right.
Well, I mean, very... I don't think the general public always understands the difference between an indictment and what a grand jury does versus what a formal trial is and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
So it is theater. It is perception. I haven't wrestled through it all, but I mean, to what end, really, at this point? I mean, I'm not... I don't know if... I think that, you know, again, this goes back to some sort of like the, you know, the quote unquote deep state and Mueller and his history and the FBI and all the people. And they're really trying to go after Trump or, you know, he found himself in this situation due to political pressure. Something had to be, you know, something had to be done, and he gets appointed, and now he's there, and now the we're rolling downhill, you know, and when does it stop?
Right.
I think it's probably a little bit more of the latter.
Yeah.
There's probably a hint of the former, right? But, you know, Mueller is not a raging liberal or anything like that. I mean,
he's a registered Republican.
He's a part of the conservative establishment, mm-hmm. you know, so.
But he also has ties with everybody. I mean, the conflict of interests are huge. And
sure.
At any level there, the recusal should be out of mind.
You can look at... I'm a libertarian, and you could say Abdul is a libertarian, you know, and like that's the difference between a conservative like Rob Kendall, our good buddy Rob, and Robert Mueller. You know, like there's a lot of differences.
There's
between
a lot of distance
two.
Between but, the two, no doubt.
Yeah, but so I think what serves as a Republican in the media establishment that we're all familiar with, because here's the thing. Most people's ideology and their beliefs are not based on what actually happens in government. It's based on their friends and their family
sure.
and the general environment of conversation.
Team A versus Team B, right. more than anything.
You know, and that's why it's that sort of proves the point of what Mueller is doing here. He's basically injecting this as Trump because he knows in days he's going to be standing next to Vladimir Putin, and he's going to be asked about the collusion. And if he gives people verifiable, hard facts of 12 Russians did this, and here's their names, then it's going to make those questions when they meet in Helsinki much
okay, yeah,
stronger.
But how do you think the meeting went on, I think it was, I thought I heard someplace that it was on Monday when Rosenstein briefs Trump that this is coming. Like
Trump looks at him and says, excellent, excellent. There was no collusion. It's great.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go
release
ahead
it. First. Exactly. Yeah.
Because
that's all he cares about.
Right. Because Trump doesn't get that he's completely hosed by that. He doesn't have the kind of political brain that if Rosenstein, I would immediately look at Rosenstein and go, what the fuck are you doing to me, you motherfucker? I will fucking end you. Like, I turn into Richard Nixon in a heartbeat.
Well, he would see it as vindication because it's just Russians and it's nothing
right.
to do with his campaign.
Right. right.
Because that's. In his mind,
is there any collusion in it?
Yeah.
right. Well, as the Federalist writes, as Margot Cleveland writes at the Federalist, Trump is right. Mueller's latest indictment suggests he's conducting a witch hunt. And here's the argument that she makes, that basically this indictment sets Trump free. Specifically, make sure I'm on the right one. Specifically, the indictment alleged Russian intel began its efforts to hack the DNC in March 2016, which was before Super Tuesday 2 and yep. the Florida, Ohio, Illinois primaries, and thus before Trump became the presumptive nominee. Additionally, the indictment did not include any allegations that Trump campaign members colluded with Russia. So much of the hacking was before he was the nominee and before it looked like he was even going to be the nominee.
Right.
So it's, like, to me, it is...
But okay, so where do you think it goes, though? When does Mueller shut down the investigation willingly?
I don't think it will.
I don't think he will, yeah. I mean, when Trump is in office. I think
if he's reelected in 2020, you think this investigation goes on for 6 years?
No, because I think the Republicans are starting to get sick of it.
Yeah.
And I think you even hear people like Rand Paul saying,
yeah.
enough of this already.
He's definitely trying to wait it out for the next, until the fall, until after the election.
Yeah.
Because obviously the Democrats are taking this as, we can impeach, this is an impeachable
right.
offense. And that's what they're running on. But
If there was collusion, yes.
Well, they don't care. They're going to bring up charges in the, no matter what.
They will if they take power. I mean, they still need to have a reasonable case, right?
The idea that Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi cares about Russian meddling because they're patriots does not, I just don't buy that.
I don't buy that at all.
Just
either,
as much
right?
as I don't, you know. I don't buy that your most hardened Republican gives two craps about the country if it means it's going to hurt Democrats. I mean, we
Correct.
See that. You see that in Trump's words, which we'll get to in a moment. like, it's about defending Trump, never cede any ground, he did nothing wrong, when in fact he did stuff that was wrong. Like, right. He said things that weren't right, and he acted in a way that wasn't right, but they're never going to give in on that.
And I think he sees it, too, as a slap in the face of that he needed help to win the election, where he didn't do it himself.
Oh,
he had all,
sure.
Trump, definitely.
It's all about... That's
all it's about, yeah.
So if he says anything bad about Putin, it's almost like he's giving in for whatever reason, but he doesn't realize that, like, it's a Chinese finger trap. The fact that he won't say anything...
That's culturally insensitive.
The fact that he won't say anything bad about Donald Trump just reaffirms the perception, where if he said, you know, hey, I don't like that you did all that meddling... He just thinks that the meddling undermines the fact that he won the election fair and square.
Those are now called Thai cave toys.
It's very funny.
I just came up with it. So, I'll be at Crackers this weekend.
Well, you're the only one. So the end of the Mueller investigation will come about because of Republican pressure. It's going to stop being just a fringe Freedom Caucus fight to now you're credibly damaging the ability of the president to operate, because I think they see the ego wound with this. Like, everybody kind of knows, but now it's to the point that it's hurting the country. And so they're going to really fight. Like, mainstream Republicans are going to start coming out and saying, like, to me, the tell is Rand Paul. Like, when
I don't think you can treat Rand Paul as a tell for anything.
Well, maybe.
He's too fringe.
Yeah. But I just see it as it's going to end because the Republicans know that they have to end this for their own survival.
I was listening to 538 the other day. They use Rob Portman. He's your generic bellwether Republican.
Right.
Right? So when Rob Portman starts swaying one way, then there you go.
I think after the Strzok and Page hearings and all that gets settled, I think there's going to be a lot of pissed off Republicans.
Yeah.
And then that's going to pretty much get the ball rolling.
Yeah, but politically, right? I mean, when it gets shut down, and assuming there's no collusion charge, then it has to come with the, we're done, we found no collusion.
Well, even a collusion, you have to have a crime. My point being,
it is beneficial to the Republican cause.
Right.
Right?
When it's shut down?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, because
until
they're going to say it's been a witch hunt for 4 years or however long it goes on.
But see, that's where I don't think it adds up, Chris. I don't think that Mueller's waiting out for it to become a blue wave.
Right.
Like, Mueller has an unlimited budget. He can do whatever he wants. He's getting paid.
And it's being executed. No, I mean, really still to, I mean, I, how much power Rosenstein has over,
I believe,
it.
Rosenstein has the call of whether or not,
right,
it
and
can continue.
He's a Republican.
And he's the only person, which is why they're threatening to impeach him.
Yeah. Like, so unless they, you know, he has motivation to want a blue wave, right? I mean,
I think, like, if you're on the Mueller team, or if you're Rod Rosenstein, I think there's a sense that you're doing your duty to your country.
Correct.
It's lofty, like the way that you hear Comey speak.
Yes.
You know, it's some grand thing that they're doing.
We're doing our public duty. Yeah. Well, yeah.
That duty.
Deep state.
All right. Someone said they can't hear us, but that person clearly was
Turn
dumb.
Your volume up,
honestly.
Dummy.
Honestly.
I can hear myself just fine. I'm actually quite loud in these headphones.
Yeah.
Dr. Dre, can you turn those down?
Exactly.
I need more snare
in his headphones, please. Jeff wants to know if you want to go to the dog park, but apparently you're here, and
I will be at the dog park Friday night.
You love that dog park.
No, I won't be Yeah. I love the dog bar. My dogs love it. I don't love it.
You go to a dog bar every
Friday
night.
I love the chicks, and my dog, Kona, he loves the bitches.
That is a good strategy. Take your dog to the dog bar and let the girls pet the dog.
Funny thing about my dog is it's a wiener dog.
Very good. So I mean, what do you guys, like, at this point, should the Mueller investigation be shut down?
Oh, I don't think it should have ever been started. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, to me, it doesn't matter either way. I mean, yeah. He's fishing for nonsense. He's going to keep finding crimes. that have been committed, whether or not they have anything to do with, well, Paul Manafort's, what, 10-year-old money laundering charges right. or whatever from Ukraine. I mean, okay, at some point, this shit's getting out of hand, and you are finding crimes, yeah, but nobody...
Maybe once they get Roger Stone. I mean, that's actually not a...
I see it more as a political or just they've got to come up with something to keep going. So no. They've always got to... You got to bring fish home.
No, I for sure think that Roger Stone will get charged, and that'll be the culmination. And then maybe it'll end after that. But he'll probably get something low like... You know, unregistering for foreign whatever.
Well,
I don't
yeah, they'll
know.
Get him on or a process crime. Right. I mean, that's the whole thing they were talking about. How Trump's wanting to testify or go in and give a statement. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? Why would you ever go talk to? You're not. He's reportedly never been under investigation.
Roger?
No, Trump.
Trump.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not. He's not under investigation for anything.
I was like, I think Stone's probably been under investigation a few times.
But, oh, yeah.
But no, Trump. Yeah, Trump has never. It's been the campaign.
I don't know if there's been a time where Stone probably wasn't under but since probably like 1970.
Right. But don't insult my intelligence and tell me that Trump has never been the target of this thing. Like, that's the whole point of this,
yeah,
right?
Target, yes. What I think Tad is saying is, like, that they've been able to get to a formal point, right? Where it's a hot, actual thing.
Right.
Right?
So, I think the thing that drives me the craziest is the reaction to all this.
Oh, Trump derangement syndrome?
It's exactly what it is. It's like... It's off the charts.
Side effects equal.
All of this is off the charts.
All of it.
Well, it's outrage. It's outrage.
Honestly,
culture.
Like I don't think, and maybe I'm just being a grouchy Gen Xer at this point, right?
Right.
But I mean, if it wasn't this, it's something else.
Yeah.
Right. So great, shut down the Mueller investigation. Whatever. I mean, right. there would still be plenty in the way that you know Trump and the media and. Left and right and boomers and this and right. Like it would still be a nutsy sideshow.
It'd be his businesses,
right?
His businesses are corrupt as the day is long.
Yeah, as a 30-year-old boomer, I would agree.
Yeah, you're right. So that then leads us to, I'm literally getting a text message. I got a text message from a friend and it says, just explain to my grandma what swoobs are. She told me to put ice down my shirt. You know what swoobs are?
Sweaty man boobs?
Well, sweaty boobs in general.
Well, I was... Never mind.
So, all right. Sorry, I just got distracted. So this sets the stage. You hear what's going on. And so the media is all engaged in these 12 Russians that have colluded. And then they go to Helsinki a couple days ago. And he meets with Putin. And the media is just waiting.
Just wait.
We're waiting for... They're waiting for anything to be outraged about at this point. And Donald Trump, as always, is more than willing to give it to them. He never disappoints. He can never help himself. He just has to shoot himself right in the face. And so, as we said earlier, they meet and then they come out and they give some statements. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to play you... This is going to be a little long. I'm going to play longer clips than you'd hear somewhere else, but I want you to hear the actual words of everybody, unfiltered, unedited. I mean, obviously, I stopped and started at some point. I'm not going to play 45 minutes. I'm going to play like 10 minutes here of audio because I want you to hear exactly what was said by these two men.
And you won't get this filter. You won't get this in the mainstream media either.
That's right. So this is Trump's initial remarks, and so why I pulled this. Is that it's not the controversial part. It's him talking about what they actually talked about and why he wanted to meet with Putin and their shared goals. So without further ado, here is Donald Trump.
I'm here today to continue the proud tradition of bold American diplomacy. From the earliest days of our republic, American leaders have understood that diplomacy and engagement is preferable to conflict and hostility. A productive dialogue is not only good for the United States and good for Russia, but it is good for the world. The disagreements between our two countries are well known, and President Putin and I discussed them at length today. But if we're going to solve many of the problems facing our world,
then we are going to have to find ways to cooperate in pursuit of shared interests. Too often in both recent past and long ago, we have seen the consequences when diplomacy is left on the table. We have also seen the benefits of cooperation. In the last century, our nations fought alongside one another in the Second World War. Even during the tensions of the Cold War, when the world looked much different than it does today, the United States and Russia were able to maintain a strong dialogue. But our relationship has never been worse than it is now. However, that changed as of about 4 hours ago. I really believe that. Nothing would be easier politically than to refuse to meet, to refuse to engage, but that would not accomplish anything. As president, I cannot make decisions on foreign policy in a futile effort to appease partisan critics or the media or Democrats who want to do nothing but resist and obstruct. Constructive dialogue between the United States and Russia afford the opportunity to open new pathways toward peace and stability in our world. I would rather take a political risk in pursuit of peace than to risk peace in pursuit of politics. As president, I will always put what is best for America and what is best for the American people. During today's meeting, I addressed directly with President Putin the issue of Russian interference in our elections. I felt this was a message best delivered in person, spent a great deal of time talking about it, and President Putin may very well want to address it, and very strongly, because he feels very strongly about it, and he has an interesting idea. We also discussed one of the most critical challenges facing humanity, nuclear proliferation. I provided an update on my meeting last month with Chairman Kim on the denuclearization of North Korea. And after today, I am very sure that President Putin and Russia want very much to end that problem, going to work with us, and I appreciate that commitment. The President and I also discussed the scourge of radical Islamic terrorism. Both Russia and the United States have suffered horrific terrorist attacks, and we have agreed to maintain open communication between our security agencies to protect our citizens from this global menace. Last year, we told Russia about a planned attack in St. Petersburg, and they were able to stop it cold. They found them. They stopped them. There was no doubt about it. I appreciated President Putin's phone call afterwards to thank me. I also emphasized the importance of placing pressure on Iran to halt its nuclear ambitions and to stop its campaign of violence throughout the area, throughout the Middle East. As we discussed at length, the crisis in Syria is a complex one. Cooperation between our two countries has the potential to save hundreds of thousands of lives. I also made clear that the United States will not allow Iran to benefit from our successful campaign against ISIS. We have just about eradicated ISIS in the area. We also agreed that representatives from our national security councils we'll meet to follow up on all of the issues we addressed today and to continue the progress we have started right here in Helsinki. Today's meeting is only the beginning of a longer process, but we have taken the first steps toward a brighter future and one with a strong dialogue and a lot of thought. Our expectations are grounded in realism, but our hopes are grounded in America's desire for friendship, cooperation, and peace. And I think I can speak on behalf of Russia when I say that also. President Putin, I want to thank you again for joining me for these important discussions and for advancing open dialogue between Russia and the United States.
Dialogue.
It's normal Trump is funny. Even normal Trump is funny. He's like
that's scripted Trump.
It's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's him reading.
So when do you guys think that was written?
Oh, well, I think that's all written way in advance. I think 2 years in, like, the Trump White House.
Can you imagine working for Trump doing stuff?
No. Oh my God. No, I think the White House now is much more professional than it was this time last year.
Oh, for sure.
They definitely have a better handle on things. And in the clip, the last clip that I'll play, you'll hear part of that panic because of him. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, he stays mostly on script here.
Right.
Right. There's a little bit of Trump editorializing.
Basically saying it's good for us to meet. Diplomacy is good. And like people were getting, and there's one guy named Doug Matakonis who he writes Outside the Beltway. He's a very smart individual, you know, but he's like, I will never support Rand Paul again because Rand Paul said, you know, basically Rand Paul basically said, like, we should talk to our enemies. That's the purpose of diplomacy. It keeps us from going to war. And then he's like, I'm not supporting him because of that. It's like, what's wrong with what he said?
I like pretty much everything he said. I don't understand why people are more flip shit over this than they were with little Kim Jong-il. Like, what? Or Un, whatever.
It's because
no one flipped much about this.
This part was fine. Had he shut up.
Well.
He took questions.
No, I know. Well.
Never take questions.
Yeah.
No, here's the thing. Trump, scripted Trump.
Well, they're pissed at the meeting.
Non-Twitter Trump. Non-taking questions Trump. Fine. He'd be at 50% approval rating. There'd be no blue wave. Donald Trump on Twitter and in Q&A, not so good. Yeah. No, the thing
is...
Yeah,
but the other thing, the fun paradox of this is that if it was only scripted Trump, he wouldn't have won.
That's exactly right. No, he would have been boring.
He would have had a higher approval rating,
right.
But less likelihood of actually winning.
Listen,
right.
Or even being reelected.
In 2 weeks, nobody will give a damn.
Right. So, no, exactly. It's been 9 days since Brett Kavanaugh was a nominee. Do you even remember Brett Kavanaugh? Do you remember any of that?
I think I went to middle school with him.
Right, exactly. I went to Brett. Yeah, I was.
The news media just moves so damn quick. And the only thing they're hinging on is this Russia shit. So
right. So, yeah, the Russia stuff is falling apart, so they have to amp it up. And that's why, like, the hyperbole around Russia is getting to the point where he's a traitor. And he's, like, it's because...
This is cause for impeachment, just the meeting.
Just the meeting is cause
for treasonous.
Impeachment? Okay. All right. So he goes on to take questions, and here is the first question that that got him in trouble.
Mr. President, you tweeted this morning that it's U.S. foolishness, stupidity, and the Mueller probe that is responsible for the decline in U.S. relations with Russia. Do you hold Russia at all accountable for anything in particular? And if so, what would you consider them that they are responsible for?
Yes, I do. I hold both countries responsible. I think that the United States has been foolish. I think we've all been foolish. We should have had this dialogue a long time ago. A long time, frankly, before I got to office. And I think we're all to blame. I think that the United States now has stepped forward along with Russia, and we're getting together, and we have a chance to do some great things, whether it's nuclear proliferation in terms of stopping. We have to do it. Ultimately, that's probably the most important thing that we can be working on. But I do feel that we have both made some mistakes. I think that the probe is a disaster for our country. I think it's kept us apart. It's kept us separated. There was no collusion at all. Everybody knows it. People are being brought out to the fore. So far that I know, virtually none of it related to the campaign. And they're going to have to try really hard to find somebody that did relate to the campaign. That was a clean campaign. I beat Hillary Clinton easily. And frankly, we beat her. And I'm not even saying from the standpoint, we won that race. And it's a shame that there can even be a little bit of a cloud over it. People know that. People understand it. But the main thing, and we discussed this also, is zero collusion. And it has had a negative impact upon
the relationship of the two largest nuclear powers in the world. We have 90% of nuclear power between the two countries. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous what's going on with the probe.
For President Putin, I could follow up as well. Why should Americans and why should President Trump believe your statement that Russia did not intervene in the 2016 election, given the evidence that U.S. intelligence agencies have provided? And will you consider extraditing the 12 Russian officials that were indicted last week by a U.S. grand jury?
Well, I'm going to let the president answer the second part of that question. But as you know, the whole concept of that came up perhaps a little bit before, but it came out
as
a reason why the Democrats lost an election, which, frankly, they should have been able to win because the Electoral College is much more advantageous for Democrats, as you know, than it is to Republicans. We won the Electoral College by a lot, 306 to 223, I believe.
Good answer, Vlad.
And that was a well-fought battle. We did a great job. And frankly, I'm going to let the president speak to the second part of your question. But just to say it one time again, and I say it all the time, there was no collusion. I didn't know the president. There was nobody to collude with. There was no collusion with the campaign. And every time you hear all of these, you know, 12 and 14, it's stuff that has nothing to do. And frankly, they admit these are not people involved in the campaign. But to the average reader out there, they're saying, well, maybe that does. It doesn't. And even the people involved, some perhaps told misstories, although in one case the FBI said there was no lie. There was no lie. Somebody else said there was. We ran a brilliant campaign, and that's why I'm president. Thank you.
Vlad gets 30 seconds.
As to who is to be believed and who is not to be believed, you can trust no one. Where did you get this idea that President Trump trusts me or I trust him? He defends the interests of the United States of America, and I do defend the interests of the Russian Federation. We do have interests that are common. We are looking for points of contact. There are issues where our postures diverge, and we are looking for ways to reconcile our differences.
So the America First president initially basically starts out saying this.
Mr. President, you tweeted this morning that it's U.S. foolishness, stupidity, and the Mueller probe that is responsible for the decline in U.S. relations with Russia. Do you hold Russia at all accountable for anything in particular? And if so, what would you consider them that they are responsible for?
Yes, I do. I hold both countries responsible.
So, I think that's a shot at Obama in his mind, right?
Of course it is, yeah. So all of this is just pure Freudian, just regurgitating, I won, I'm a legitimate president, you're driving me crazy, please stop, stop making me feel inferior.
Yes.
Yeah. That's all it is.
Yep. Narcissism is a tough thing.
It is. I battle it every day. So then here comes the but I just found it interesting.
No, but the irony here is he spent how much of his campaign talking about how weak Obama is for apologizing.
Right.
And then what's the first thing that comes? What's his tweet in the morning? Well, it's partially our fault.
He's standing next to Putin, and he just lays down like a cowardly. I mean, he's just a man of strength. Like, no, he's not. He's a very cowardly person. And that's the thing about mental illness is that, like, if you let yourself go unchecked, if you don't take care of your ego problems like he does, you just turn into a very weak person. He wants Putin to like him. He wants Putin.
Whoever he's next to.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He's a people pleaser. He's so they always called Jimmy Carter weak because he was kind of that way. But like to me, Trump is just much weaker. I mean, I find him to be a sad figure.
Especially on the foreign policy issues.
Yes.
Because he, obviously, it's not his strong point.
Right.
So
the people he's supposed to stand up to when it's tough, like it's tough to stand next to a guy who kills people who are political opponents.
Hillary?
Yeah. who assassinates journalists, who, you know, invades sovereign countries, two in the last 10 years in Georgia and the UK.
Hillary?
Yeah. Like,
Gaddafi?
He's basically, he's afraid of the guy a little bit, in my mind, and he wants him to like him because he does respect what Putin is able to build.
Yeah.
Like, to me, Putin is everything that Donald Trump kind of wants to be. But he has no respect for liberal fat ankles Merkel and, you know, that cuck Mark Macron. Like,
Trudeau.
Justin Ladyboy Trudeau.
Well, you know what Putin did to her, right?
Oh,
when they had their meeting and she hates dogs.
And he had his dogs come in and, like, hang out.
Yep.
Pet my dogs.
That's one of the best photo ops, like, you'll ever see. Look up those pictures, people. Yeah. And they're like the biggest fucking dogs you'll ever see in your life, too.
He's Putin is all about, he's everything Donald wants.
Well, yeah, he's KGB. I mean, he's been KGB forever. He is.
Yes.
He's a killer.
So.
He's a trained, and he rides on the backs of bears. I've seen the pictures.
So here's the second question that got the Donald in hot water.
Just now, President Putin denied having anything to do with the election interference in 2016. Every U.S. intelligence agency
Listen
has concluded that, Russia did.
Is that Jim?
What? Who?
Mr. President.
Who's asking the question?
I don't. It's somebody from Reuters, I think. And he's just, Mr. President. You watch the. I was telling the guys before we started. I was watching the Fourth Estate on Showtime. It's the circus for the New York Times, basically. And so basically, they go behind the scenes and they show you how journalism works. It's really great. I love it. But it's just nothing but soy boys and beta cucks everywhere. I'm just watching it, laughing, going, I want to sit down with my alt right friend just to hear him laugh at like. It's like Michael Barbaro.
Did you see the picture that was posted about the New York Times? It's ice cream day in the office, and then they're all lined up, and then somebody posts a picture like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Because it's like guys wearing flip-flops and like tank tops.
Horn-rimmed glasses.
Just, I mean, the ideal just what a liberal soy boy or whatever it would look like. It was pretty funny.
It's just, he just, like, you watch the video, he just plays right into that stereotype of what everything Trump hates about the media. Like,
who are you with?
Well, that's the funny thing. Neither of these guys, you're supposed to stand up, say your name, and who you're with. Like, that's the protocol. So when other news outlets play it, then you get a mention. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just basic etiquette to like stand up and say, my name is Joe Smith from Reuters. Like, but neither of these guys, I'm gonna write them up on the journalistic front. But
yeah, even Tad Western knows that.
But right, so I like Putin. Nobody you can trust nobody
immediately.
But just this guy's voice cracks me up.
Just now, President Putin denied having anything to do with the election interference in 2016. Every U.S. intelligence agency has concluded that Russia did. My first question for you, sir, is who do you believe? My second question is, would you now, with the whole world watching, tell President Putin, would you denounce what happened in 2016, and would you warn him to never do it again?
Such virtue.
So let me just say that we have two thoughts.
You two have thoughts.
Groups that are wondering why the FBI never took the server. Why haven't they taken the server?
The server of the DNC.
Why was the FBI told to leave the office of the Democratic National Committee? I've been wondering that. I've been asking that for months and months, and I've been tweeting it out and calling it out on social media. Where is the server? I want to know, where is the server?
They don't need
and
to take
what
it.
Is the server saying? With that being said, all I can do is ask the question. My people came to me, Dan Coats came to me,
and
some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be, but I really do want to see the server. But I have confidence in both parties. I really believe that this will probably go on for a while, but I don't think it can go on without finding out what happened to the server. What happened to the servers of the Pakistani gentleman that worked on the DNC? Where are those servers? They're missing. Where are they? What happened to Hillary Clinton's emails? 33,000 emails, gone, just gone. I think in Russia they wouldn't be gone so easily. I think it's a disgrace that we can't get Hillary Clinton's 33,000 emails. So I have great confidence in my intelligence people, but I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. And what he did is an incredible offer. He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators with respect to the 12 people. I think that's an incredible offer.
Okay? Who is Seth Rich?
Позвольте мне добавить два слова.
I'd like to add something to this. After all, I was an intelligence officer myself.
И знаю, как составляются соответствующие досье.
And I do know how dossiers are made up. Just a quote, just a second.
Это первое.
That's the first thing.
Второе.
Now the second thing.
Я считаю Россию демократическим государством.
I believe that Russia is a democratic state. And I hope you're not denying this right to your own country. You're not denying that United States is a democracy. Do you believe United States is a democracy?
А если это так?
And if so, if it is a democratic state, then the final conclusion in this kind of a dispute can only be delivered by a trial, by the court, not by the executive, by the law enforcement. For instance, the Concord company that was brought up is being accused. It's being accused of interference. But this company does not constitute the Russian state. It does not represent the Russian state. And I brought several examples before. Well, you have a lot of individuals in the United States, take George Soros, for instance, with multi-billion capitals. But it, does that make him his position, his posture, the posture of the United States? No, it does not. Well, it's the same case. There is the issue of trying a case in the court. And the final say is for the court to deliver. We are now talking about the private, the individuals, and not about particular states. And as far as the most recent allegation is concerned about the Russian intelligence officers, we do have an intergovernmental treaty. Please do send us the request. We will.
All right. So
I believe him.
Yeah, they both you hear them both do the exact same thing, which is completely misdirect. Like, we're going to move away from the question. Here is the initial question.
Just now, President Putin denied having anything to do with the election interference in 2016. Every U.S. intelligence agency has concluded that Russia did. My first question for you, sir, is who do you believe? My second question is, would you now, with the whole world watching, tell President Putin, would you denounce what happened in 2016? And would you warn him to never do it again?
So the question is that. Do you think he did it, and do you think that that was a good thing to have happen?
Yeah.
Donald Trump then immediately starts talking about servers. Vladimir Putin starts talking about elections and like not and courts and George Soros. Like,
he knows how to make a dossier.
I know how to. I too was in a KGB.
Espionage.
I am familiar with everything you know. So this server thing that Donald Trump starts rambling on about, the DNC servers were not removed. They were imaged. And so when you image a server, you basically log everything that happened on that server. You don't need to take the physical box. This is an example of Donald Trump not knowing anything about technology whatsoever, and he's talked to Jeanne Pirro or some, you know, Sean Hannity type who's like, why didn't they take the server? Yeah, that's a good idea. Like your buddy's boomer dad golf buddy. He's trying to understand technology. They didn't need to take the server. They imaged it. As you heard earlier, as we outlined, they were watching all the keystrokes on all of it. They understood all of it. He undermines Dan Coats. Dan Coats was a senator here in Indiana for most of my life, and he seems like a very smart and intelligent guy. I've met him. He's very polite and nice, and he seems to love his country, and he 100% believes that he's the director of the intelligence agencies. He's basically the guy that is at the top of the 17 different agencies, and he repeatedly says that it is... That is the Russians.
It's the Russians.
He said it again today, and then Donald Trump again said, "Well, it could be the Russians. I don't know. It could." He goes back to
it could be lots of people.
It could be lots of people. He continually undermines Dan Coats and makes his own intelligence agencies look foolish. The Pakistani, there was like some Pakistani guy who worked for the Democrats and set up servers for a bunch of different House people.
He's an IT guy.
Yeah, an IT.
Wong.
What's the story with the Pakistani guy there?
Oh God! Do you want the official story? Or do you want the?
Give me the official story. Give me 30 seconds of each.
From what I understand and remember reading, he was Debbie Wasserman Schultz's personal IT guy, and then he also was a lot of DNC, I believe, and then a lot of various other House and Senate members' IT guy, and then he was running a scam where his company only hired his family members, and then he was running a huge... He took over like $3 million, I believe, of taxpayer dollars, so you should be pissed about that. But it was a scam. He'd sign them up. He was getting like $100,000 a year per person he signed up, and then it was some big financial bullshit. But he was also Pakistani.
Uh-oh.
He had ties to Hezbollah, whatever the hell. I don't remember what it was, but and then he disappeared. They found his. I do believe they found a backpack with his laptop
with
and
a server.
His. I think yeah. It was. I think it was a server.
It was.
I believe. Yeah. And then all of his access key cards and everything, and he just rolled out. I guess. I don't know. Apparently he had some information on Seth Rich. I don't know. It all goes back to Seth Rich. And all
right.
I don't know. There. I don't remember the whole story, but. Look into it. I'm sure Alex Jones has got some.
So then he he made a wonderful offer. The ex-KGB KGB expert who basically sent intelligence officers to steal information from the other major political party in the United States. He offered I will help you with investigation. I will send people. We will look into it with you.
No, you will send people here to Russia.
Okay.
And we'll let you watch our people interrogate our agents. Oh, okay. And then we should be able to interrogate people that we would want to interrogate.
Right. Yeah. This is a wonderful offer. It's so kind of you.
I like it.
So, I mean, there's all this. I mean, Chris, you and I have dabbled in politics, right?
Right.
And you know, not at the presidential level.
Right.
But the amount of preparation and practice and like trying to be on script and not say something stupid, right? Like even at our little, C-League level, right? There's work there.
Sure.
Can you imagine being the staffer or being John Bolton in the next room when this question comes up and seeing Trump just like...
There are videos and I have seen on camera and you can see it on things like The Circus where the staff just goes white. And there's a moment later, like today's press conference, where you can hear Sarah Huckabee Sanders screaming, "No! No! Out!" Like, it is the worst. It is just the worst. Like, Donald Trump. But you kind of, like, here's why I just don't get so bent out of shape. This is really bad. Like Vladimir Putin is a bad person.
Yeah.
This program in, I think, 2013 called him the next great dictator. I didn't have time to go and find where I said that, but I was going to play it today because I wanted to prove that I was right. But Vladimir Putin is a person who kills political opponents. He's not even hiding it anymore. He's pretty naked about it at this point. Like he's a little too comfortable, and so he's starting to get reckless with stuff.
Right.
Because he realizes... ain't nobody going to do shit. I'm going to invade Ukraine. They aren't going to do anything. You know, we can survive whatever sanctions they place on us. They're still going to have us come to the G8. You know, like, he gets away with everything, and nobody does anything about it. And so this is just another example. The only counterbalance to Vladimir Putin is the United States president. And the problem with what Donald Trump did is that he completely laid down in front of Vladimir Putin. Now, is Putin going to invade Lithuania tomorrow because Donald Trump acted like a weakling? No. Donald Trump did exactly what Vladimir Putin knows.
Knew Donald Trump would do.
Exactly. We all know this about Donald Trump at this point. That's why this isn't worth the hyperventilation over it. It's that... Donald Trump is... Well, let me read this piece from Jonah Goldberg. Not the whole piece, but because I think he's going to say it way better than whatever what is going to come out. During a joint news appearance with Russian President Vladimir Putin, Trump demonstrated that, when put to the test, he cannot see any issue through a prism other than his grievances and ego. In a performance that should elicit some resignations from his administration, the president sided with Russia over America's national security community, including Dan Coats, the Trump-appointed director of national intelligence. Days ago, Coates issued a blistering warning that not only had Russia meddled in our election, undisputed by almost everyone save the president himself, but it is preparing to do so again. But when asked about Russian interference in Helsinki, Trump replied, "All I can do is ask the question. My people came to me, Dan Coats came to me, and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He said it's not Russia. I will say this, I don't see any reason why it would be Russia. I have confidence in both parties." Separately, when asked about the frosty relations between the two countries, Trump said, "I hold both countries responsible. I think we're all to blame. I do feel that we've made some mistakes." And conservatives are just screeching because this is blame America mentality and this is Noam Chomsky territory. Like, Trump's right, which I'll explain in a moment.
How could you be so wrong and so right at the same time?
Amid these and other appalling statements, Trump made it clear that he can only understand the investigation into Russia interference as an attempt to rob him. To rob him of credit for his electoral victory and thus to delegitimize his presidency. For most people with a grasp of the facts, supporters and critics alike, the question of Russian interference and the question of Russian collusion with the Trump campaign are separate. Russia did interfere in the election, full stop. Whether there was collusion is still an open question, even if many Trump supporters have made up their minds about it. With Russian interference or collusion, it got Trump over the finish line is ultimately unknowable, though I think it's very unlikely. And that's really what it comes down to, is he's a very sick man.
I think he sees it, obviously, as if he says, yes, there obviously was Russian interference, it's granting some sort of win to Bob Mueller and the Democrats.
I don't know. If you do listen, I mean, he says he came at Putin in the one-on-one.
Right.
Right? In the prepared statement.
Right.
Where he had just a little bit of editorializing. I mean, I wouldn't say he was tough, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he said, I asked tough questions, we went through it, we spent a lot of time on this thing.
Yeah, but I don't believe Donald Trump when he says that.
True, but...
But he's also tweeted back when all this came out that, oh, the Russians, maybe now they can get the emails, Hillary's emails. So, like, it's not like he doesn't...
I hear you, but I think...
He doesn't agree with it.
I think the same thing is that as soon as it's the press asking the question...
Oh, no, he doesn't want...
He has twisted it into this, like...
Right.
Like, I can't differentiate between just meddling and collusion.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to give them any, in his mind, bone.
Right.
You know, he doesn't want to throw them a bone because, oh, Trump admits to Russian collusion, the way they'd run it, but... I don't know. It's a shit show either way.
Right. I mean, ultimately, Donald Trump is doing what every U.S. president has done. He's trying to be cordial and suck up a little bit to Vladimir Putin because they all think they can charm Vladimir Putin into moderating, and that's just not the case. You know, I looked into his soul with Bush or the reset button, or I'll have more flexibility.
That's what he should have brought.
Right. He should have brought a reset button. Now this was far beyond the pale of any of those things. Like there's degrees. It's not equivalency. But, you know, the other problem is the false equivalency of, you know, the American government is not morally equal with the Russian government. The Russian government is a dictatorship run by Putin, and it's a very nice dictatorship. Mm-hmm. Like, of all the dictatorships over the last 150 years, not one that you choose that one.
If you go for Pinochet.
You just love helicopters.
I do.
So
I actually started GoFundMe. I'm trying to get a tad helicopter. I'm going to throw liberals from it.
So... But it is a dictatorship. You have no freedom to vote. You have no freedom of speech. You have no freedom of press. You have limited freedom of religion. Like, it is, you could not have this podcast in Russia. Like, we could not do this podcast where I criticize Vladimir Putin the way that I criticize Donald Trump. You know, so there is no moral equivalency in many ways between the United States and America, and he to protect his ego, Donald Trump continually makes some sort of equivalency between him and North Korea and Vladimir Putin and Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines, who is another one of these strong men.
Oh, I like him.
Yeah, I mean, so he is. There was an article in Foreign Policy, Trump's Unrequited Love for Vladimir Putin. It's in the show notes, and it kind of is asking the question of, like, why does Donald Trump love Vladimir Putin? And it lays out sort of an interesting psychological parallel between his dad and some of these strong guys. So he wrote the book John Quincy Adams' Militant Spirit, James Traub. So he wrote, "We know, of course, that Trump is deeply drawn to dictators of all kinds, including outright maniacs like Philippines' Rodrigo Duterte. That's no mystery. Trump admires strength, despises weakness, and regards all impediments to fulfillment of his desires, including the law, as unjust. He ran his company like they run their countries. What's more, Trump sees his alleged ability to forge a working relationship with the meanest hombres, whether North Korean leader Un or Putin, as the ultimate proof of his own strength. He could do what none of his predecessors could do because he's tougher. Putin is the brightest star in that twinkly constellation. He's the most powerful of them. He runs the biggest country with the biggest military. He has the balls to stand up to the United States, and Trump's respect for cojones greatly exceeds his patriotism. Many of the dictators, like Turkey's Erdogan, are Puritans with modest wives trailing in the background. Putin, however, is said to have dumped his wife for a gymnast 30 years his junior, which is kind of a move Trump respects. Above all, Putin understands, as Trump does, that a strong man shapes his own reality. Many of the American people stubbornly refuse to believe what Donald Trump wants them to believe. He's dogged by fake news. Putin is not. The Kremlin writes the news, and the Russian people absorb it. He's a leader, as Trump told Joe Scarborough. The only attribute Trump has ever admired is the toughness required to win a fight. All his life, he looked up to men who fought and won. That begins with his father, Fred, whom he described to a biographer as a very difficult man who would never let anything go, and whose own highest term of praise was killer. The insignificant role that Trump's mother, Marianne, plays in his own accounts of his life may help explain the radically unbalanced personality. Trump then transfers his affections to Theodore Dobias, a World War II veteran and brutal drill sergeant at the New York Military Academy. As a young businessman, he attached himself to Roy Cohn, the unscrupulous fixer. Trump owns everyone, or thinks he does, save the man stronger than himself. That man is Vladimir Putin, who has risen to the top in a world incomparably more brutal than any Trump himself has known. He has taken what he wanted through force and guile. Perhaps Trump really does accept that Putin interfered in the 2016 elections. But what he can't reveal is that he only admires the Russian leader for all the more of his audacity. Trump looks at the leaders of countries he's told are America's allies, and he sees powerful people meekly submitting to rules. Vladimir Putin laughs at rules. How can Trump not respect and envy and defer to this man? Perhaps the word love has no place in Trump's emotional vocabulary, at least for people who have not sprung from his loins. But if he could not love anyone, would it not be Putin? I think that just, like, nails it. Like, to me, that makes so much sense. Because, and I've seen this in successful men, they really only respect people who are more successful than them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know,
I mean, and especially growing up and building the business in New York, he was always shunned by the New York elite.
Right.
And that was his biggest thing, was to get back at him.
Yep. So, you know, are Americans to blame for the bad relationship with Russia? Absolutely. We have an attitude that we want to make every country operate like the United States of America, and we're willing to interfere in your country and your elections and in your sphere of influence to make it happen. You know, for instance, we supported in 2014 the Maidan Uprising in the Ukraine and the overthrow of the Yanukovych government in the hopes of repeating this exercise in Moscow at some point. And this was orchestrated by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
What?
Yeah. It was the second American attempt to install a Ukrainian government hostile to Moscow. This is from an article called Trump is Right About Who's to Blame for Bad Relations with Russia, which I will put in the show notes with the rest of these.
Where's that one from?
That is from Asia World. So found antiwar.com today. So he's right in that we do play a part in our own misery, but he's wrong in just laying down and not acting in our best interest when he stands up and says, don't, you know, hey, knock it off. So I think, like, I look at it and go, this is just Trump. This is what are we freaking out about? Is he a traitor? No. This is just like who you elected. This is who the American people elected. They elected a fragile. They elected their dad's golfing buddy who's racist and drunk all the time and says dumb shit and just wants everything his way and, you know, smacks around his Asian bride. Like, that's who Trump is. Like, that's just how it is. Is it right? No. But I argued that from the very beginning, this is not who we should elect president.
This is not who it should be, yeah.
Because he's going to completely wreck everything, and here we are.
Good.
But at the end of the day, listen to Slow Burn from Slate, the podcast. He's still nowhere near as bad as Nixon. Yeah. Nixon was so much worse. Andrew Jackson was worse. Like, we've survived worse. Trump is abiding by legal rulings. Trump is abiding by congressional action. Trump is not. He has these tendencies, yes, but the American system is protecting us from Trump, and so we just got to get through it. The American system will survive. If it cost us, our reputation with the world never was lower than it was after Iraq, and then it built back up over time. And so if internationally we have some issues, it'll be fine. It's all going to be fine. Let's stop freaking out. He's not going to cause World War III. Nobody takes this joke seriously. Most importantly, Vladimir Putin. Capiche?
Capiche.
I don't know. Whatever you say, boss.
Thanks.
We were saved, Vladimir.
So, dear leader, please.
Oh, dear leader is what we're going by?
So, Donald Trump is apparently ecstatic about it. He's like, he was beyond happy about his performance that day. He walked off, he was beaming. Everybody was like, he was like, how great was I? I did so well. Then he gets on Air Force One, clicks on the TV, and he sees...
Everybody's head's blowing up.
Yeah. So, Donald Trump, you know, he decides to walk it back. This is how Donald Trump walks it back the next day.
Let me begin by saying that, once again, the full faith and support for America's intelligence agencies. I have a full faith in our intelligence agencies. Whoops, they just turned off the light. That must be the intelligence agencies.
The lights dimmed at that moment.
You guys okay?
That's a message.
That was strange, but that's okay. So I'll begin by stating that I have full faith and support for America's great intelligence agencies, always had. And I have felt very strongly that while Russia's actions had no impact at all on the outcome of the election, let me be totally clear in saying that, and I've said this many times, I accept our intelligence community's conclusion that Russia's meddling in the 2016 election took place. Could be other people also. There's a lot of people out there.
China.
There was no collusion. A lot of people have come out strongly on that. I thought that I made myself very clear by having just reviewed the transcript. Now, I have to say, I came back and I said, what is going on? What's the big deal?
Here we go.
So I got a transcript. I reviewed it. I actually went out and reviewed a clip of an answer that I
got.
I
a clip.
And I realized that there is a need for some clarification. It should have been obvious. I thought it would be obvious, but I would like to clarify just in case it wasn't. In a key sentence in my remarks, I said the word would instead of wouldn't. The sentence should have been, I don't see any reason why I wouldn't or why it wouldn't be Russia. So just to repeat it, I said the word would instead of wouldn't. And the sentence should have been, and I thought it would be maybe a little bit unclear on the transcript or unclear on the actual video, The sentence should have been, I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be Russia. Sort of a double negative. So you can put that in, and I think that probably clarifies things pretty good by itself.
So that's
I have
a positive,
on numerous
right?
occasions noted our intelligence findings that Russians attempted to interfere in our elections. Unlike previous administrations, my administration has and will continue to move aggressively to repeal any efforts and repel. We will stop it. We will repel it. Repel. Any efforts to interfere in our elections. We're doing everything in our power to prevent Russian interference in 2018. And we have a lot of power. As you know, President Obama was given information just prior to the election, last election, 2016, and they decided not to do anything about it. The reason they decided that was pretty obvious to all. They thought Hillary Clinton was going to win the election, and they didn't think it was a big deal. When I won the election, they thought it was a very big deal, and all of a sudden they went into action, but it was a little bit late. So he was given that in sharp contrast to the way it should be. And President Obama, along with Brennan and Clapper and the whole group that you see on television now, probably getting paid a lot of money by your networks, they knew about Russia's attempt to interfere in the election in September, and they totally buried it.
All right, so here's what he meant to say, okay? I will say this. I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be, but I really do want to see the server. So I will say this. I don't really... So do you think that Russia had anything to do... Do you think that Russia had anything to do with it? I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be Russia. That makes it worse. He's really, like... He's just not had a bad few days this bad since Charlottesville. I mean, it's really stunningly bad, and it just...
I have a theory why he's off his game.
Why?
Well, you know a Secret Service agent died, right?
No, what happened?
Yeah, while he was in golfing, and where were these? Yeah, Scotland.
Scotland.
Yeah, guy had a heart attack. You remember who also had a heart attack?
Yeah, every Russian journalist that's died.
Andrew Breitbart.
Oh,
hit him with the old CIA gun. I tell you what. So Trump, he was off his game because, you know, they tried to hit him.
Maybe is he the food taster?
I don't know. But it's a little sketchy.
So
the deep state's coming after him. I'm telling you what.
So yeah, the would or the wouldn't make any difference at all. It would make a difference. It wouldn't. See, that's where would or wouldn't make a difference. If you're
I don't know
that.
Why he came out and even said that. Like, why apologize or try to clarify it?
Right.
It's an un-Trumpian thing to do.
So let's see. So they've changed the headline, but this is, you know. So here's the original headline from the New York Times that I got an alert today. Russia is no longer targeting the U.S., Trump says, contradicting his own intelligence director. Now the headline says, Trump appears to say Russia is no longer targeting U.S., White House says he was answering a different question. And so if you watch the video, and I've got the audio here, it's at the very end of the cabinet meeting. It's 58 minutes into it. At the very end, and you hear this is the end of every press conference cabinet meeting thing now, is Sarah Huckabee Sanders screaming like a madwoman to get everyone out of the boardroom. And then Donald, you know, takes questions, and this is when he gets himself into trouble, is when he does stuff like this. And so, you know, he's basically saying, you're welcome. You're welcome. No, no, no. Like, basically, like, I'm not answering questions. Move along. But this new tactic, it's not necessarily new, but it's really, like, ratcheted up, thanks to Jim Acosta, of shouting questions at the president at inappropriate times when he's never going to answer. They're doing it more because of things like this, is because it works. So here we go. This is what happened today. As he walked back the walk back of his walk back.
Long after...
It's Mike Pence.
After we finish our work here, that will pay dividends for prosperity for the American people.
I think so, Mike. I do think so. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
Friends,
thank
you. Get your way out. Is Russia...
Get out.
Is Russia still targeting the U.S.? Thank Press, you let's go. Time. Make your way out. No, you don't believe that to be the case? Let's go. We're going to hear it. Senator Schumer said you were walking back. Press, let's go.
All right, so I'm going to play that again so you can hear it. I talked over it a little bit, but hear her ask the question, and he says no.
Long after we finish our work here, that will pay dividends for prosperity for the American people.
I think so, Mike. I do think so. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
Press,
thank
make
you.
Your way out. Is Russia still targeting the U.S.? Press, let's go. Make your way out. No, you don't believe that to be the case? Let's go. We're going to hear it.
Senator Schumer said you were walking back.
Press, let's go.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Make a way out. Can you just
we're doing very well.
Okay.
We are doing very well, and we're doing very well, probably as well as anybody has ever done with Russia. And there's been no president ever as tough as I have been on Russia. All you have to do is look at the numbers, look at what we've done, look at sanctions, look at ambassadors not there, look, unfortunately, at what happened in Syria recently. And I think President Putin knows that better than anybody, certainly a lot better than the media. He understands it, and he's not happy about it. And he shouldn't be happy about it, because there's never been a president as tough on Russia as I have been. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you believe people are going to
do it?
Thank you. Let's finish here. Let's go. Make a way out.
She it's like she's calling pigs back on the Arkansas farm as a kid, like.
So now, was he saying no to the question? Like, is there a video of this?
Yeah,
or what?
All right, so I don't know. Let me show you the video, okay? Let me see what you guys think, because my read on it was he wasn't exactly saying no to this, but let me see what you guys think of this. Let me play this video here. All right, so let's see. I'm not getting any audio, so this is great. Here we go.
Press, let's go. Make your way out. No, you don't believe that to be the case? Let's go. We're finished here.
Is Russia still targeting the U.S., Mr. President?
Press, let's go. Make your way out. No, you don't believe that to be the case? Let's go. We're finished here.
Senator Schumer said you were walking back to
the press, let's go.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Make your way out.
So, I rewatching it, looks like he says no to her, but... It's
they're
still,
blowing that up like it's a big deal.
Like he legitimately made a policy statement, and I totally fell for it. Like I read it and then I go read the story and I'm like, what is this madman thinking? Like your 2 hour meeting cured all the relations the issues, but then you watch the video and you're like, oh, the story and the headline are completely different than what the reality of it was.
Yeah, that was
you are fake news.
Yeah, that was. Definitely fake news.
100% fake news. So.
Oh, man. Do you hear my knees?
Yeah.
That was cute.
You're ricketier than...
Joe Rickenbacker?
Yeah. I feel like we just ran out of steam, like all...
I know. My knees just took the steam out.
I didn't know where that was going.
Right, I know. Well, I need to make chicken because I haven't eaten in several hours anyways. But so we should probably start wrapping this up. So let's give her final thoughts on all this. Let's start with Matt.
Well, it's a sideshow, and it's so unfortunate, and it's not going to get any better. And, you know, Trump is here as president because we've got a crappy system now. He knew how to – whatever his motivation for becoming president, like, it happened.
Right.
And his media savvy and TV savvy – and brand savvy took advantage of all the, you know, the silly weak spots in the system, and here we are.
And a weak Congress doesn't stand up to him on stuff.
Weak Congress
like this.
Doesn't help, and I don't see how this gets much better over time, right? So, you know, without something very massive or game-changing kind of breaking, right? I mean, maybe he'll get a challenge from within the Republican Party in the primary. That could be helpful, but if they if they throw eight people at him, then he'll be last man standing again.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, maybe we'll see some resignations. Maybe that would start to trigger some things and create some opposition. But I can tell you the left is doing absolutely nothing to help themselves in this cause.
For sure.
Because every time they scream, they play right into every narrative that he just takes advantage of.
Yep.
I mean, I was watching, I was trying to, you know, catch up a little bit, and saw an interview with, I was watching, it was like a Sky News British show, and they interviewed some, you know, former FBI, former CIA or whatever, and he lives like overseas now, and you know, he's making decent sense and all this type of stuff. And then he gets to the point where he says, basically, like, Trump's base, and he didn't literally say this, but this is exactly how it'll come. Well, let me try to get as close to what he actually said, right? He's like, Trump's base, they don't get it. They don't have the same worldview as we do in Washington or London.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't understand the nuance of all this, basically. Right? So, like, if you support Trump, you're stupid.
Right.
Right? We're all smarter than you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to play, I mean, and that absolute attitude, even, you know, with the best of intentions, is going to play right in
completely
to every single narrative. And I just, between that and just watching Facebook, I still don't understand how the coasts, more or less, and I'm generalizing here, like, mm-hmm. they don't get it.
Yeah.
No one on the coast gets it. Like, I worked with lots of people out east and I, you know, friends on the Facebook. I don't talk politics with them or whatever, but, you know, they're all, Donald Trump. And I understand why they would be, right? I don't like Donald Trump either. But, like, everything they say about it, like, just plays into, like, if you support him, you're a dummy and you're not as...
They just can't control themselves.
They can't.
And in so many ways, so many of these hyperventilating people are just as irrational and impulsive as Donald Trump.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when people in the middle, people in the rational, reasonable part of the country go, okay, I'm not going to exchange one crazy, irrational person for another.
Yeah, I get it. But, I mean, even these are more or less rational people that I'm talking about, right? But it's just the worldview is so different. Right, and the caricature of what it is to be a Trump supporter,
right,
is it's too pervasive,
right,
and so, you know, are we going to get something even wackier from the Democrats and a popularity contest? I don't know. We should just do it American Idol style or something, you know.
Well, Hillary is apparently laying the groundwork for 2020.
Well, she just wants a campaign contribution.
She's just as in denial as Donald Trump is about half the country not accepting that he's president, the left's absolute madness over the fact that they lost to Donald Trump, he couldn't have just won by legal means. He had to have somehow stolen the election. And it's as much of a conspiracy theory as Barack Obama is not an American, he's a Muslim. Like, it's just a flat-out conspiracy.
You can be both.
Right. Like, there are people like, you know, Jonathan Chait in The New Yorker, or I think it was New York Magazine, wrote, you know, an 8,000-word piece about how Donald Trump could have colluded with Russia to steal all, like, and it just gets to that he was, since 1987, an asset of Russia, and he's just a, like, the idea that Donald Trump...
True.
Yeah, but the idea that Donald Trump has somehow some sort of Russian asset being controlled by Vladimir Putin is a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
And remember how everybody mocked so many Republicans for so many years about Obama conspiracy theories. And the right,
Manchurian candidate.
Right, and the right is just polite, so they don't do it back, and the media doesn't buy into it because they're all leftists. And it's a conspiracy theory that Donald Trump is compromat. But you have senators going around saying it, not to play politics, but because they genuinely believe that. And so it's not going to work. It's not going to end up playing.
I don't buy that. I don't buy that the senators actually believe that.
Right.
They know that will play into their red meat.
All right, fair enough.
I think. But anyway, it's at least funny.
It's entertaining as hell, I can tell you that.
We're having a good time, aren't we?
Oh, I'm having a blast.
Could you imagine the misery?
I don't know if I would want to have more fun or wouldn't want to have more fun. I'm not sure.
Does it, like, so I guess I'm at the point where I'm completely nihilistic about politics, and I don't know if it's because I'm a libertarian who's been around the libertarians too long. Or if
that'll make you nihilistic.
Or if it's because I've just become completely desensitized to all this. Like, I can't feel anything. Like, when Donald Trump stands next to the world's foremost brutal, the most brutal dictator in North Korea, and then the second, like, in Putin, you just go, Yeah, well, that's Donald Trump. Like, what did you expect when you elected him? Like, you expected anything other? Like, I just, I can't get on the bus of being outraged every 3 hours.
Yes.
You know, I was outraged in 2015, and then it wore off. And then it's like, by the grabber by the pussy tape, it's just, I'm done with the outrage. Like,
yeah.
Once he got elected, it was like, all right, well, this is what we get. Might as well have fun with it.
It'll be a good 8 years.
I can't do
good
it anymore.
Good content.
I sure hope it's not eight.
Oh, it's going to be. He's getting reelected. He's getting reelected at this point. Because people like me who have been staunchly anti-Trump look at this and go, all right, you're so... If I'm going to have irrational and crazy, I'd rather have an irrational, crazy person who's going to give me Gorsuch and tax cuts.
I get that.
Than Kamala Harris, who's going to be irrational and build this massive government. I think this is a center right country.
Yeah.
Still, so he's getting reelected at this point. If the Democrats keep doing what they're doing, if it's Joe Biden, even though he's 83,
I think Biden has a chance at him.
I do too. I think he's the only one.
He's not left enough.
He eats. Yeah. Can he get through a primary?
No.
So, but you're going to have those.
You might have enough progressives splitting the vote.
Exactly right.
Just like we had enough establishmentees splitting the vote to let Trump through. I don't know. I think it still remains to be seen whether someone in the Republican Party they'll be able to consolidate around a single opponent. Because I think he could be taken down in the primary.
I don't.
It'd be tough.
I wouldn't
put better than 50% at it right now, but I think we have more likelihood of that happening than we've had against any incumbent president in recent memory.
But whoever would come out would have to, I mean, Trump would eviscerate him before they even got to that point.
Trump fights so dirty, and Republicans can't do it the way that Trump does it. It's not a fair fight, and so it just wouldn't, like, because the backlash from their own constituents, they couldn't. It's like,
yeah, what, I don't know what the right profile would be, right?
Right, like Rubio folded in a heartbeat.
Yeah,
you know, the second he tried to do Trump, two days later he was apologizing with weeping.
Yeah,
in the
but
corner.
He shouldn't have tried to do Trump because he you know, that's the
he
thing.
Was a little Marco.
Somebody's just got to come at it with grace and
lack of preachiness.
With lack of preaching.
Like, Jeff Flake gets so old. Like, I can't hear Jeff Flake and John McCain anymore. Like, we get it. You're better than Donald Trump. Fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't... Yeah, I'm not putting it better than 50% at this point, but boy, I'd like to see it.
I can't
Makes
wait.
For fun politics to watch, though.
Dude, Greg said it all the time. Can you imagine how boring the show would be if Hillary Clinton were president? How boring, how miserable we'd be every single episode. Like, well, we're against this. So, I'd be like an anarcho-capitalist show. I'm done with the state.
Well, at least it should start getting interesting in January, right?
Yeah, no, I mean...
Maybe even December?
Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders all are gearing up their... And Joe Biden are all gearing up their runs. Hillary Clinton is floating the idea that she'd run again. You know, and that's just the starter pack. There's going to be 5 to 10 other people who are going to take a run at it.
Yeah, so, I'm talking official, like, it's on.
Right.
Type of stuff, right?
Buckle up, baby.
We'll start getting debates, like, what, about less than a year from now. Should be.
In 2019?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the election's...
Primary
debates.
Summer.
Yeah. It'd be next summer.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Oh.
Dust your campaign microphone off.
Well, we gained 5,000 downloads an episode over the because of that
election.
Yeah,
you got the Tad Western bump.
That's right. So if we can quadruple our audience again in 2020, I'm all for it. So.
Oh, I can't wait.
Heck yeah. No, it'll be it's a, you know, we'll watch the circus.
Tad Western, final thoughts?
I think this is all going to blow over. I mean, I don't think it's a good look right now for Trump, obviously, but I think the whole idea in his mind is that he wants to get along with Russia and North Korea because they are nuclear power. Well, I mean, North Korea technically isn't, but to get along would probably be a pretty good thing. And in my mind, it would be. I mean, just kind of normalize things. I mean, obviously they are pretty much a elected dictatorship. But
I like that he's willing to talk to people that the traditional foreign policy establishment has not been willing to talk to in a constructive way.
I agree.
And I think that there's a lot of risk to it, but at the end of the day, he's willing to sit down and have a conversation with these people in a non-structured way that is probably more productive than whatever way Hillary Clinton would have approached it.
Well, there would have been like 4 weeks of pre-negotiations, and you're allowed to say these sentences and not those. Yeah,
even if it just gets us to on the same page in Syria, that right there is worth it.
A new nuclear treaty. Trump floated that he was ready to sign a deal with Putin. Abolishing, or reducing nuclear weapons.
Which I read an article yesterday about how Trump was trying to. I mean, he was working on the Palestine and Israel conflict back in like 1987. He said that would be the greatest deal of all time.
Right.
Which, I mean, good luck. But
no.
At least he doesn't want. He sees. Obviously, peacetime to be better for business. I mean, from a business standpoint.
Yeah, he's dropping bombs just, at the same rate that his predecessors were, but he is at least, maybe he'll make peace cool again in certain quadrants of the Republican Party.
Well, I don't think you want a crazy Trump going all balls to the wall warlike. You think
Madman card.
Yeah, you think Trump right now is bad. I mean, could you imagine if we were at war, or God forbid that something broke out?
Well, I'll piggyback off of that. If you've got anything else, go ahead.
Oh, anything else going on? I think this will blow over. I think Trump will find his new something next week will happen. I mean,
we got
Supreme. But the Supreme Court's going to be voting
next week, I think.
I mean, and so that'll take the news cycle for a while.
So I will. My final thought is basically calm down. Like, because, at the end of the day, Trump has put sanctions on Russia. He has taken steps to protect the electorate from Russian interference. He's increased. His administration has done a lot of things that are anti-Russia. And so the system is working in a lot of ways. He's respecting the system in a lot of ways. He just says things. You can't listen to the words that Donald Trump says. It is the actions of the administration that count. And the administration actions don't get covered like the words, because the words are fun to debate and argue, and they get clicks. And they make people like me click on push notifications, and that's what the New York Times sells. But the reality is that things are much less heated than you think they are. If you pay attention, if you just do some, spend 2 hours a weekend reading.
If you go to the source and the substance and just kind of look at that, exactly, and make your own opinion. Because, like, I never heard I had never read the articles about what people were saying about it, or the headlines. I don't read the damn news. I'll just go watch the full video on YouTube, and I'm like, what the hell is everybody freaking out about this shit for?
So, did he do the right thing? Absolutely not. Did I ever expect Donald Trump would do the right thing? Absolutely not. So I'm not surprised. My expectations are failure with Donald Trump, and I got exactly what I expected.
But when he lands the win,
right,
then it's good.
Listen, when he does something good for liberty, I'm all for it. But in this case, I think in terms of liberty, it's neutral, because he's not. He didn't sign anything. There was nothing that is the force of international law. He talked with Putin about a lot of really good things. The thing that people are freaked out about is appearances and, strategy and the words that were said. It's like, I know everybody says, words are so important in diplomacy.
And with the banner of the whole Russian collusion thing hanging over it, it's just another takes it to another level.
Right. Like, Vladimir Putin walked away the winner of this summit. It's like, this is not the fucking Super Bowl. There is no winner or loser. It's like, that's where Donald Trump, in some respects, has a much more mature approach towards these summits than the media, and even somewhat the foreign policy establishment, like the Council on Foreign Relations. He's like, yeah, I'm going to go feel the guy out. I'm going to go have a conversation with him. I'm going to go see what he's like.
He sees it as a business lunch.
Right. Whereas the media is going, who won? It's like, There is no winner or loser. This is just an evolving discussion about a variety of issues. So it's just not as deep or as scary as the media makes it out to be. And you just got to, you know, ironically, to break that, you've got to read more of it.
Mm-hmm. And you've got to read into it. And then the real winner of the summit was Barron because he got that sweet soccer ball.
But it's bugged, right?
I would imagine.
That's laced funny. With arsenic.
Yeah, wash your hands, Melania, after you touch that.
Trust me, Melania ain't touching no balls in the White House.
Oh, shit.
All right, thanks for listening to this episode of We Are Libertarians. Thanks to our $100 a month subscribers in Jason Doolittle, Christy Avery, Craig DaCosta, and Brandon Luke. Love you guys. Love all of our patrons. You guys make all of this possible, and we appreciate it so much. I tentatively have another episode scheduled for tomorrow, so you're getting four this week because you will get none next week when I am in Podcast Movement. That's a big podcasting convention, so I'm filling you up on this week when I've got the vacation time. So hopefully my voice will last. but if I don't see you tomorrow, if for some reason the interview falls flat, we're doing a From the Swamp episode, and Rob has a very crazy schedule. So if he falls through, then I will see you in a couple weeks. If not, I will see you tomorrow. Love you guys long time. And please, any comments, send them to editor@WeAreLibertarians. And until then, Tad, I'm going to let you do the sign off. I don't know. I don't have a sign off anymore, but I'm going to let you close the show because I have the biggest broadcaster in all of Turkey on the show. And I'd be remiss if I didn't let you close this episode.
Well, remember, everybody at home, to keep them holstered unless you're ready for a shootout.